Welcome to Base by Base, the papercast that brings genomics to you wherever you are. What if the blueprint for your brain's health, its resilience against conditions like dementia, wasn't just in your genes or the lifestyle choices you make today, but was actually profoundly shaped by every social experience you've had, maybe since the moment you were born?
That's a powerful thought.
Yeah, imagine that enduring poverty or difficult childhoods or even just unequal access to healthcare don't just affect your opportunities in life, but fundamentally redesign the very architecture of your brain.
It shifts the focus quite dramatically, doesn't it?
It really does. And here's where it gets really interesting. A new deep dive into some groundbreaking research suggests these cumulative social factors could be, well, far more powerful predictors of brain health than we've maybe ever truly understood.
Implying we've been potentially missing a big piece of the puzzle.
Exactly. It forces us to ask, how much of our brain's destiny is written not just by biology, but by the world around us? So today, we want to celebrate the vital work of the Multi-Partner Consortium to expand dementia research in Latin America. You might know them as REDLAT.
Right. Led by Agustín Ibáñez and his really dedicated team of researchers.
Absolutely.
They've truly advanced our understanding of how our social environment, you know, across an entire lifetime, can profoundly impact brain health and dementia outcomes.
And critically, in populations often underrepresented in global research.
Yes, that inclusivity is so important. It's a critical step in making research more applicable globally.
Okay, so let's unpack this a bit. Dementia is, well, it's a growing global crisis. We know that.
Sadly, yes.
And it's particularly prevalent in Latin America, which is a region grappling with some significant social inequalities.
That's a key context here.
Right. Because traditionally, when we think about dementia risk, we often focus on factors like, say, education level or socioeconomic status, but kind of in isolation.
As if they're separate boxes to tick.
Yeah.
But this raises a really important question. What if these individual factors are just, you know, pieces of a much larger, more interconnected puzzle?
Okay.
There's this concept called the exposome. Think of it as the totality of all your environmental, social, and biological exposures accumulated over your entire lifetime.
Like your life's unique environmental fingerprint.
Exactly. Yeah. A great way to put it. And within this broader exposome, there's the social exposome.
Yeah.
This specifically captures the cumulative impact of socially driven exposures. Everything from your childhood experiences right through to adult financial stress. It's about how every social interaction, every condition, kind of layers on top of the last one, building up over years.
Okay, so it's not just one bad hand dealt, but maybe a whole lifetime of challenging circumstances stacking up.
Precisely.
For instance, a child growing up in poverty might face limited schooling opportunities, maybe food insecurity, poor nutrition, that impacts brain development right from the start.
Yes, those early years are critical.
Then, as an adult, maybe there's chronic stress from financial worries or traumatic events adding to that burden.
Mm-hmm.
So by older age, all these accumulated adverse exposures could increase vulnerability to neurodegeneration.
That's the hypothesis.
And this paper introduces this term, the multidimensional social exposome, or MSE. It goes beyond just looking at, say, years of education.
It aims for a much more holistic view of your social journey, integrating multiple factors across time.
And what's truly fascinating here, you mentioned the context Latin America. Why is that region so critical for studying this MSE?
Well, a couple of reasons. First, it unfortunately has the second highest estimated global prevalence of dementia.
Wow.
And second, it's one of the most unequal regions in the world.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned the Gini score is often above 0.47, reflecting huge wealth gaps.
So you have this intense concentration of risk factors.
Exactly. A powerful interplay of unique educational challenges, food insecurity, childhood difficulties, healthcare disparities, all potentially influencing brain health in ways we haven't fully grasped.
Because previous research was often biased towards high-income countries.
Correct. Often focused on places like the U.S. or Europe, which just don't capture this same complex cumulative impact in such diverse populations. So this study really fills a crucial gap, offering insights that are relevant far beyond Latin America.
So given this huge complex problem measuring a lifetime of social experience, you have to wonder, how did the researchers even begin to tackle that? How did they measure something so intricate?
It was a remarkably comprehensive approach. They studied 211 individuals across six Latin American countries. Argentina, Brazil, Chile, Colombia, Mexico, and Peru.
A really broad sample.
Very broad. And it included healthy controls, people with Alzheimer's disease, and also those with frontotemporal lobar degeneration, or FTLD.
So they could see how these social factors played out in different neurological contexts.
Exactly. That comparison is really valuable.
I was really struck by the depth of their questionnaire, the multidimensional social exposome questionnaire. It wasn't just asking about basics.
No, it went much deeper.
It seemed to delve into really granular details, like not just years of education, but even the number of books at home during childhood.
Mm, those early environmental factors.
And it covered things like school quality, parents' education, food insecurity. Like, did people eat less or less healthily due to money?
Yes. Very practical, real-world questions.
Their financial status, financial resilience, how easily they could access healthcare, including barriers like transport.
Things that often get overlooked in broader surveys.
Right. And even childhood labor, how people felt about their socioeconomic status. Difficult childhood experiences like family conflict, neglect, traumatic events.
That's incredibly thorough.
But why was capturing that level of detail across different life stages so crucial? Why not just stick to simpler measures like income or years in school?
That's a great question, and it really gets to the heart of their innovation. This wasn't just any survey. It was carefully designed by experts who really understood the participants' context, validated across diverse Spanish-speaking communities. Mm. The goal was to systematically evaluate 10 key dimensions of social experience across different life stages, from birth to 10 years, then around 35 to 45, and also recently.
Capturing the lifespan perspective.
Exactly. By capturing these specific, nuanced details across time, they could build a truly rich picture of accumulated adversity or advantage. It moves far beyond single, isolated factors that might totally miss the interplay of these experiences over a lifetime.
Okay, so they gather all this incredibly detailed information. How did they then actually quantify it, turn it into a score? The MSC.
Right. They needed a way to synthesize it. First, they scaled all the individual items from the questionnaire. Then they averaged these to create scores for each of the 10 dimensions.
Makes sense.
Then came the sophisticated part. They used advanced statistical modeling specifically, something called structural equation modeling, or SIM.
Okay, SIM.
This allowed them to combine those 10-dimension scores into a single overall latent MSE score for each person. Think of it as capturing the underlying essence of their cumulative social experience.
So one number representing that whole complex picture.
Pretty much. And this single score was powerful, because they could then rigorously compare its predictive power against looking at just individual factors using other statistical tools like lasso regression and meta regressions.
Basically seeing if the whole MSE score told you more than just, say, education level alone.
Precisely. Was the whole truly greater than the sum of its parts?
And beyond these social factors, they obviously needed to look at actual brain health outcomes.
Of course. They assessed cognitive function using standard tests like the Mini Mental State Examination, or MMSE.
Okay.
They measured functional ability daily activities with the Pfeffer Functional Activities Questionnaire. And they looked at neuropsychiatric symptoms, things like depression or anxiety, using the NPIQ.
So cognition, function, and behavior.
The key clinical dimensions. And crucially for the brain itself, they used MRI.
Ah, the structural part.
Yes, to measure gray matter volume in different brain regions. And they also used resting state fMRI to look at functional connectivity, how different brain areas are communicating.
That's quite a comprehensive assessment.
It really is. And I should mention the rigor. They did extensive sensitivity analyses. They checked if results held up when accounting for age, sex, country, disease severity, even which MRI scanner was used.
That thoroughness definitely boosts confidence in the findings. So after all that, what did this deep investigation ultimately reveal about how our social germ impacts our brain? So what did they discover? What was the big takeaway?
Well, the headline finding, looking across the entire group of over 2,000 people, was pretty stark, actually.
Okay.
The more adverse an individual's multidimensional social exposome, that cumulative score we talked about, the worse their cognitive function, the lower their functional ability in daily life, and the higher their neuropsychiatric symptoms.
So a clear negative correlation across the board.
A very clear link. For instance, higher adverse MSE scores were significantly associated with lower cognitive scores and notably increased neuropsychiatric symptoms.
When you step back, what does that tell us?
It really underscores the sheer weight of that cumulative burden. It's not just one thing, it's the pile up over years.
And did certain aspects of the MSE stand out more than others?
Yes, they did. Among the specific indicators they measured, things like education, food insecurity, financial status, assets, and access to healthcare consistently emerged as the most critical predictors.
Those fundamentals.
Exactly. And this pattern held true even when they looked at the specific groups separately.
Ah, so how did it differ between healthy aging and those with dementia?
Good question. In the healthy aging group, adverse MSE was specifically linked to lower cognitive function. Here, having fewer assets and lower education seemed to be the strongest drivers.
Okay, primarily cognition in healthy folks. What about Alzheimer's?
For individuals with Alzheimer's disease, the impact was broader. Adverse MSE was associated with poorer cognition, yes, but also reduced functional ability and increased neuropsychiatric symptoms.
The whole spectrum.
Yes. And here, education, food insecurity, and assets were again top indicators driving that association.
And frontotemporal lobar degeneration, FTLD.
A very similar pattern there, too. Adverse MSE predicted declines in all three areas: cognition, function, and neuropsychiatric symptoms. In FTLD, the leading factors seem to be education, financial status, and subjective socioeconomic status, how people perceive their own standing.
What seems particularly compelling to me is how that combined MSE score performed compared to just looking at single factors in isolation.
Absolutely. That was a key part of the analysis. The study consistently showed that the cumulative MSE measures had a stronger effect and better predictive power than isolated factors, like just using years of education or a basic socioeconomic score.
It really highlights that the sum is greater than its parts when it comes to social adversity impacting the brain, doesn't it?
It truly does. The way these disadvantages interact and accumulate seems to have an effect beyond just adding them up individually.
So this raises that important question about the brain itself. What did they find structurally? You mentioned gray matter volume.
Right. They found significant links. In people with Alzheimer's disease, a more adverse MSE was linked to reduced gray matter volume.
Where in the brain?
Primarily in critical frontal regions, areas like the superior, middle, and inferior frontal gyri, the anterior cingulate gyrus. These are vital for planning, decision-making, emotional regulation, also the insula, and even parts of the cerebellum.
Okay, so key hubs for higher order functions, and in FTLD.
A similar story. Adverse MSE also meant decreased gray matter, again in frontal areas, but also temporal regions and the cerebellum. These are precisely the areas often affected by these specific dementia types, suggesting the social exposome might exacerbate the underlying pathology.
And what about brain connectivity? You said that got interesting.
Yes, this was quite nuanced. In Alzheimer's disease, greater MSE adversity was associated with lower connectivity in some key networks, particularly involving frontotemporal regions.
Okay, weaker communication. That makes intuitive sense.
But surprisingly, it was also linked to higher connectivity in other pathways.
Higher. How does that fit?
Well, the same pattern of both reduced and increased functional connectivity was also seen in FTLD.
So weaker connections in some places, stronger in others, linked to more social adversity.
Exactly. The interpretation is that the brain might be trying to compensate. It might be rerouting signals or working harder in some areas to make up for the deficits caused by both the neurodegeneration and the cumulative environmental stress.
Like it's fighting back, trying to adapt.
That's one possibility. It makes you think about how incredibly adaptable, yet ultimately vulnerable, our brains really are when faced with these lifelong pressures.
So bringing this all together, what does this research really mean for us? For the future of dementia research, for care, maybe even for society?
Well, the findings are quite clear. Adverse social experiences, layered across a lifetime, profoundly impact brain health. They lead to greater cognitive decline, functional impairment, and neuropsychiatric issues later in life.
It really drives home that this isn't just about individual choices made today. It's about the entire landscape of a person's life, stretching right back to childhood.
Absolutely. And this truly expands our understanding. It emphasizes that we really need more personalized approaches to dementia prevention and intervention.
How so?
We need strategies that integrate the full spectrum of this multidimensional social exposome, considering factors across a person's entire lifespan, not just their current situation.
And looking at the bigger picture.
The implications are potentially huge.
Yeah.
It strongly suggests that tackling structural inequalities in society, things like poverty, educational gaps, healthcare access, isn't just a matter of social justice.
Mm.
It's a critical public health strategy for protecting brain health.
So policies that reduce disparities in education or improve food security or make healthcare accessible.
You could call them brain capital policies. They are, in essence, direct investments in the cognitive and brain health of the population.
That's a compelling framing. Does the study give clues about the biological mechanisms? How does social adversity get into the brain?
It offers some suggestions. For Alzheimer's, it might be linked to dysregulated stress responses, chronic stress affecting hormones and inflammation, impacting areas like the frontal cortex and cerebellum. This could potentially amplify the classic Alzheimer's pathologies, like the buildup of amyloid plaques and tau tangles.
Okay, stress as a biological pathway. And for FTLD?
There, it might be more about the accumulation of general physiological stressors, what's sometimes called allostatic overload. Basically, the wear and tear on the body and brain from constantly adapting to difficult circumstances. This chronic physiological burden could drive the brain changes seen in FTLD.
And that compensatory hyperconnectivity finding you mentioned earlier, the stronger connections.
Yes, that's really fascinating. It might genuinely be the brain's attempt to maintain function despite the combined hit of neurodegeneration and lifelong environmental stressors.
A sign of resilience, perhaps?
Possibly. It could be particularly relevant in Alzheimer's, which typically starts later in life, giving the brain potentially more time for such compensatory efforts to develop compared to FTLD, which often has an earlier onset.
Of course, no study is perfect. Did this one have limitations we should consider?
Definitely. Like many studies of this kind, the data relied heavily on participants' self-reports for their past experiences. That can introduce recall bias, though the researchers worked hard to mitigate this.
How did they do that?
They excluded questions most likely to be biased by dementia itself, and they often confirmed information with caregivers or informants where possible. Still, it's a limitation.
And you mentioned the life stages covered.
Right. While they looked at early, middle, and recent life, they weren't exhaustive. There are gaps in the life course not covered.
Makes sense.
And another point. While powerful, this study primarily focused on the individual's social exposome.
As opposed to
integrating aggregate-level data, like measures of structural inequality for entire neighborhoods or regions. Future research could combine both levels.
And maybe look at genetics, too.
Exactly. Exploring interactions with genetic risk factors and other environmental exposures like air pollution would be crucial next steps. And ideally, using more probabilistic or stratified random sampling methods could enhance how generalizable the findings are.
Got it. So, important limitations to keep in mind.
But despite these, the study's strengths are significant. The comprehensive MSC assessment, the large and diverse Latin American sample, which is so needed, and those rigorous sensitivity analyses,
They
make these findings incredibly robust.
It really feels like a critical step forward.
It absolutely is. It powerfully demonstrates the need for more inclusive, more nuanced, and more tailored research models that truly reflect global diversity and the complexity of lived experience.
So if we had to boil it down, what's the core insight for you, the listener?
I think it's this. Your life social journey, everything from the quality of your childhood education to your access to healthy food as an adult, your financial security, your healthcare experiences, all of this shapes your brain health and your potential dementia risk far more deeply and cumulatively than we've often acknowledged.
It really makes you reconsider that profound interplay between our individual lives and the societal structures we live within. It's not just nature versus nurture, it's how nurture shapes nature over decades.
That's a great way to put it. And this profound connection between lifelong social experience and brain health really calls for a societal shift, doesn't it?
How do you mean?
It forces us to ask, what does this mean for how we design our communities? How should we structure our social safety nets? How can we better support each other to foster healthier aging trajectories for everyone? It's not just a medical question anymore.
It becomes a societal question, a policy question, really. A question about the kind of world we want to build for better brain health across the lifespan.
Okay.
This episode was based on an open access article under the CCB Y4.0 license. You can find a direct link to the paper and the license in our episode description. If you enjoyed this, follow or subscribe in your podcast app and leave a 5-star rating. If you'd like to support our work, use the donation link in the description. Thanks for listening, and join us next time as we explore more science, base by base. Thank you.